We are in our last week of a study of the diaconate. Up until now, we've mostly focused on talking just in general about the office of the diaconate, its biblical roots, and just general rules on what a deacon is. And so today, I'm going to focus a little bit more on our church in particular, the OPC, all the way from the denomination on down to the congregation. And then that's on the front page of your outline. And then on the reverse page, I wanted to just give a presentation on some of the principles that we here use, which are principles that are also used throughout the denomination to try to meet diaconal needs. So we'll start with how the OPC is organized, how it organizes its diaconal ministries. The denomination has a committee on diaconal ministries, and I've listed four men there below my bullet points. Not that you might ever have to talk to them, but I just think it's nice to be familiar with some names of people who are responsible for leading the church. And in this case, these are the committee members at the denominational level. And the denomination does not generally deal with individual needs. All the individual needs, we'll get to a little bit later, but are handled at the congregational level and in some cases at the presbytery level. So the denomination is more responsible for some general things and then also some specific items that are related to the diaconate. So they do work, Ministry of Mercy work at the denominational level. And that includes, my first point there is responding when the Presbytery Diaconal Committee cannot meet a need, that someone's particular need has exceeded what the presbytery is able to handle. And I'm kind of working, I got to kind of reverse and work a little backwards. Generally, individual needs are handled at the local level. And then if the local body is unable to meet a need, they can appeal at the presbytery level, which is a regional level. And our presbytery is the Presbytery of New York and New England. And then if that diaconal board is unable to meet the need, they can appeal then to the denominational level. In my time, we've never even had to come at our level, come to the presbytery level. I'll get a little bit more into the presbytery and local level. I'll skip over some thoughts I have on that to keep going about the denominational level. So then a couple items that they're specifically tasked to do is item three. There's something that we call the Obadiah Fund, which is a diaconal fund that is used to help pastors, retired pastors, and their wives in their retirement. So it's designed to help those retired pastors and wives or widows who have financial needs in their retirement. So that's a specific fund that the denominations committee manages. And then they also have, a committee on short-term missions and disaster response. And you may have seen things around our building, whether it was a note or you heard an announcement related to trying to help out with various disasters or various items that have come up that where diaconal cares or diaconal needs need to be met. Specifically, recently we had a very large organization towards relieving needs that were related to Hurricane Sandy. There was a great effort put together by, you see Mr. David Nakala there. He's the disaster response coordinator, coordinating with a couple of I don't know if it was two different presbyteries or not, but there were two different locations, one on Long Island and one in New Jersey, where they sort of centered some relief effort organizationally. And Mr. Nakala was coordinating with those two areas. There were men involved in those two areas to relieve needs. And so the denomination was sort of overarchingly helping those two command centers, if you will, organize relief effort. And the biggest thing that they do is they communicate out what the needs are to the as locally as possible through the diaconates, through pastors, through announcements, through any communications channel necessary, saying what do we need, and a lot of things that are needed are things like particular skills in building trades, for example, electricians and carpenters, and then there's, if you just want to put your hands in and do labor, there's work to be done as far as cleaning up. Sometimes there are specific skills that are necessary that they'll call for. And what they're doing is make known throughout the country all the needs that are concentrated where there's some sort of disaster, and then they can marshal resources to try to help there. Now, in the case of Hurricane Sandy, I know that Deacon Lascaz took a couple of trips to Long Island to actually physically help with the work. And I know that when something happened in upstate New York, Pastor Holman and a couple of men from Dover went into upstate New York to help out there. I think that might have been related to Irene when that storm came up the coast a couple of years ago. So these are things that can be done to help outside of our local congregation. Go ahead, Tom. Yes. Right. Deacon Armour mentioned that there's also organizational efforts when things are happening outside the country. So, for example, when the earthquake and tsunami hit Japan, there was a very large effort to send people over there to help out with all the work that was necessary to help rebuild that area. We had I don't know quite how the relationship works, but I think there was some kind of a mission there very close that was either related to or directly run by the OPC. I can't remember the relationship. But so we had our church as a whole, the OPC, had a very strong connection to that area. And we rebuilt a building that was not a church, but they rebuilt it to become a church. So that is a very large component to what they're doing at the diaconal level, is this disaster response. They also will handle anything that's diaconal related when it comes to other churches. So if another denomination, not an OPC church, has some sort of diaconal issue to where they're appealing to other churches, they would handle all that. They also try to work with the foreign missionaries to supply them with any diaconal needs that they might have. Supplies, cash, and I'll talk about in a minute, an actual deacon. We do have a missionary deacon. And that's the next point, is that they're tasked with trying to raise up, train, and support missionary deacons for where we have foreign missionaries, Uganda or Uruguay or wherever we have a missionary, we'd like to have deacons if possible. And we do have one missionary deacon, and his name is Bob Wright, which you'll see in the next B. There's a couple of diaconal matters that the Committee on Foreign Missions handles, so we'll get to that in a minute. And then one of the last point there is they work to give the local deacons, the congregational deacons, support in doing their work. The action is mostly at the local level as far as everyday diaconal work. And so what the denomination has tried to do over the last few years is provide the local deacons with training and resources to be better deacons. It's only about a year and a half now. It's June of 2012. We had the second Deacon Summit, which is a weekend training seminar, I guess you could say, that the denomination put on in Wheaton, Illinois at Wheaton College. And I think 2 years prior to that, was it 2010, there was the first one. So there were two in the last 3 years, say. The first one was in 2010, and then the second one was in 2012. I wasn't able to make the 2010 summit, but I did attend the 2012 summit last June. This is June of 2012. And so that was an effort by the denomination, and also working with some local deacons there near Wheaton, to organize an effort to give deacons as much training as possible on how to be good deacons, really. And a lot of biblical principles for deaconing. Much of what we've gone over the last 3 weeks, and much of what we'll go over on this last page, was almost wholly coming from those seminars. And so the denomination is trying to make great effort in building up that office of deacon and giving the deacons the ability and the resources necessary to be as good as they can be. And so we were able to, actually after the first one in 2010, we started to realize some of where we as local deacons were falling short of how we were supposed to be conducting our ministry. So we made, I didn't attend, but Tom and Carl and Daniel did. And when, with the information they brought back, we began to reassess how we were doing things and making changes to the way we did diaconal ministries here in our congregation. And so it was an eye-opener on some levels for the three, and then me as it filtered back to me on how we should be careful about how we provide diaconal aid to anyone, whether it be in or outside the congregation. And then I went in 2012, and we got even more training. They took some of the feedback they got from 2010, and we spent a lot of time learning about how to handle example. We had like case studies. If this happens, how do you handle this? We had a chance to discuss how things went with how things go with, you know, talk about different situations with other deacons halfway across the country and how they might handle it. And it was a really good experience to get the wisdom of as many men as possible to help us be better deacons. It's really interesting too. I mean, one of the workshops was put on by by several deacons in one congregation. I think they have 12. I think is it Matthews that has 12, or there are about 10 or 12 deacons in their congregation. It's a very large congregation, I mean, several hundred people. And then you also meet. I met a man from the Detroit area who was all by himself. So he probably is from a congregation of 40 people, and he's the lone deacon. So there's a great diversity in the different congregations and how the deacons can meet needs. That diaconate, I think it was Matthews, is very mature in the fact that it's been a congregation for a long time. The board of deacons has been at a lot of continuity, so they've really developed a very good program. So a lot of their wisdom was gleaned by us and all the other deacons who were there as well. So, okay, I've listed the men, like I mentioned earlier, and then I also listed, just for your reference, if you want to cruise around the OPC website, you can find all sorts of information related to a lot of these committees and things that are going on. There's announcements and updates on what's happened. Say, over the summer, there were a few things. You are also able to directly contribute to any of these funds, like the Obadiah Fund. You can contribute directly if that is something that you would want to do. And there's also a fund, which I'm going to get to in a second, related to widows and dependents of foreign missionaries. So there are two funds there. The Diaconal Fund of the OPC is something that we already contribute to through our, I think that one's actually through our Deacons Fund now. We used to do it in our budget, but when you contribute to the Deacons Fund, you're contributing to the diaconal ministries of the denomination, because we take a portion of that and we send it to the denomination. So you're already making your small contributions, grouped together with many others, to support all these ministries through any amount that you're contributing to the Deacons Fund every month. Is there any questions? Or I kind of haven't really stopped to... Anybody have any questions about some of these things at the denomination? Yes, Jenny? The question is, what is the Obadiah Fund? It is a fund that the denomination started in order to meet the needs of retired pastors and their spouses, and also widows of retired pastors. So if there are diaconal needs for those men or their wives or widows, they can appeal to the Obadiah Fund to help them in their need. The question was, how was that started or how was it maintained? And I don't know the history of how that became. Do you know, Greg? When we get to the presbytery level, there's some help that also occurs at the presbytery level as well. Now, at the denominational level, there's a committee on foreign missions as well, and they have two elements where they have diaconal work. The first one I've listed there is the widows and minor dependents of deceased missionaries relief fund. So that fund is to help with, well, it actually came about a few years ago, and his name is escaping me now. I had it at 9 o'clock this morning, but there was a missionary to Haiti who died in a motorcycle accident in Haiti. And they would be before the hops. His widow and he had children under 18. I don't remember how, I think there were several, maybe four or five, and they were ranged in ages probably from five or six up into the teens. I can't remember all the details, but this was probably about 5 or 6 years ago. So they began this fund. Well, I think that a lot of donations came in to help her and her family in dealing with the death of her husband. And so that then became a fund that we're now keeping up to help if in the case of any kind of death in that situation where a missionary or a missionary's family would need that diaconal assistance. And then we do also have the one missionary deacon, Bob Wright, which I had mentioned earlier. So the Committee on Foreign Missions and the Diaconal Committee work together on the raising up of missionary deacons. And a couple interesting points about Deacon Wright that I think are worth noting when it comes to what a missionary deacon does. He, along with us here at the congregation level, his primary purpose is to serve the elder or the missionary and serve the teacher or the minister. His main job is actually to tend to the temporal needs of the missionary compound there in Uganda. He's in Uganda with, all these names are escaping me. I should have written them all down. But I mean, I'm sure that he's doing diaconal work among the people that they're witnessing to. But his primary task there has been to do things like dig wells and build buildings and really get that compound together from a physical standpoint, freeing up that minister to do his job, teaching and preaching. So it's just along the same lines of what we're trying to do here. We need to free up the minister and elders to do their job, teaching and preaching, so that they're not worried about if the windows are going to fall. Well, they probably worry about that. But if they don't want to worry about changing light bulbs and making sure the heat's running and those matters that are important but are not involved with directly involved with the teaching and the preaching of the word. And so he's doing that same thing there in Uganda. So now that's at the points A and B have to do with the denominational level. Now we move to our regional level or the presbytery level. And there is a diaconal committee at the presbytery level. So our presbytery has 30-some churches. Does that sound? Pardon me? 25. Our presbytery has 25 churches. So those 25 churches are organized into the Presbytery of New York and New England. And one of the diaconal boards within the presbytery serves as the presbytery's diaconal committee. And our committee here, our congregation's committee, has a lot of direct experience in that because we served up until December of 2012 for 2 years. It went by fast. I was going to say one, it was only a year, but it was two. Instead of having a committee that's made up of several men throughout the region, it rotates along, and we've passed it along this year to, I don't know the name of the church, but it's in Amsterdam, New York. And we passed it along to them, so now they're handling all the presbytery diaconal matters. And the main purpose of the Presbytery Diaconal Committee is to help regionally when local boards are unable to meet a need. So a local board can see a need and say, okay, we can't meet this need, or we can't meet it fully. Let's appeal to the Presbytery's committee and see what we can do regionally to meet this need. And in our time, we met several needs that had to do. One need we met was there's a retired pastor in Maine who needs assistance with his health insurance, so we paid a regular premium on the Medigap, it was called. So we paid a regular premium on that to assist him. And then we met several non-recurring needs that mostly had to do with some of the mission works. So you have, like, we had one of the mission works in the area was in Lowell, and there was a need there that, you know, being a mission work, they don't necessarily have their finances built up and strong yet. So they appealed to the presbytery for a need there, and we were able to meet. I don't know if we met all of it, but we were able to meet at least a good chunk of it. So that's its purpose, is to be another way for the congregations to try to meet a need and start to marshal the resources of the 25 congregations to do so. And the Presbytery Diaconal Committee could also appeal then to that denominations committee if there was something even greater that they were unable to handle. So we have sort of a three-level way to go from an individual would come to a local deacon, and the local diaconate would attempt to meet that need. And if the local diaconate was unable, would push up to the presbytery level, and then again to the denomination level if the need was greater than the presbytery could handle. And so, for example, if you had a problem that you needed, you wouldn't go straight to the denominations committee and contact, you know, Lendl Smith and say, help me, I need help. He would just say, go talk to your deacons. That's why they're there, right there at the congregational level. And of course, if a congregation doesn't have deacons, the duties devolve back to the session. Or if there's no session, like if it's a mission work, the pastor or the home missionary handles those matters. Then we get into the local level, the congregational diaconal boards, which is what you would be most familiar with. That's Daniel and Carl plus Tom and me. And we are the local deacons. We comprise the board. So it's our task then to handle all the ministry of mercy here at this level, plus all the temporal needs of the church in the sense of the finances and the building and things of that nature. When we're talking about the local level, what are some of the principles that we use for the ministry of mercy? So before I move on to that, does anybody have any questions or comments about the way the OPC organizes its personnel and organizes its ministries, just the whole organization that I went over? Any questions there?
Are the people on the committees?
The question was, are the men on the committee deacons or other officers or non-deacons, or what are their offices in the church? And Lendl is a retired minister, and we think that Ronald Pierce is an active minister, but may be retired. And then David Haney and David Nakla are either elders. Well, David Haney's an elder, and we're not sure if David Nakla is an elder or a deacon. Okay, the principles of how we try to implement the ministry of mercy here at Amiskig. This is a topic that could probably, if we really got into a lot of detail, could go on for several classes. But I really just wanted to try to skim off the top a little bit and just give you some idea of some of the things that we do when we are confronted with a diaconal need, and how do we deal with it, how do we manage it, how do we interact with the person seeking it. And it's helpful to break up someone's need into two areas. So I've done that here with bullet points A and B. You can see there's short-term needs and long-term needs. So short-term needs, we'll go there first. A couple of examples would be just something to help you understand what we mean by that. Is it's usually just a small dollar financial need to address an immediate problem. Perhaps I've given two examples, an unexpected medical bill or a car problem. So someone is just confronted with something that has just overwhelmed them, but it's a temporary thing that we don't expect to last or become recurring. It also could be something that isn't really financial, like an injury. I've written, you know, injury, illness, or a condition where somebody just needs physical help. We do that. Our Committee on Hospitality meets that need on a regular basis every time they deliver a meal to somebody, whether it's a woman who's just given birth or somebody who's ill, if they just need some help. So there are other examples that, you know, if somebody just needs some kind of assistance, it doesn't necessarily require cash. Whether it's, I've written there, prepare a meal or help somebody with child care or perform yard work. On work days in the past, we've sent a crew to an elderly person's home to perform yard work for them. Things of that, there's a diaconal component to that of just helping out whoever needs it because they don't have a have the physical ability to handle it on their own, usually on a temporary basis. So how we respond to that need, well, typically I've broken it down into members and non-members because sometimes we have people come to the door asking for some sort of assistant. So when it comes to a non-member, I've written there that, you know, what that person's relationship is to the church has some bearing on how we will respond. For example, if somebody is a regular visitor, they're going to be, you know, we have some more knowledge of their situation. We understand them better. So they're here all the time, and we know them, but they're just not a member versus somebody knocking on the door. We're a little bit more wary. We're trying to be good stewards of our funds. Unfortunately, there are a lot of people out there who, for lack of a better term, will hop around from church to church to try to just get small donations to, and many times just feed something that is very sinful, whether it's some kind of addiction or usually something like that. That's what we typically might think of. So we don't want to contribute or we don't want to make it easier for someone to continue in that kind of a lifestyle. So we're very careful about trying to help them, though we typically do, but we typically will avoid any kind of a cash assistance. If someone comes and says, I just need $20 for whatever, instead of saying, no problem, here's $20, we will typically try to come alongside the person, try to make sure that person gets a gospel message, and we'll actually try to do something. I know that Daniel, not having small children and making it a lot easier for him to kind of take off and leave when someone comes and is actually physically here in the building on a Sunday, he has taken people to a grocery store and bought them groceries. Or he's taken someone over to Rite Aid and bought them their prescription that they say they needed. So there's a little bit of a testing there to make sure that the need is genuine. And then there's a effort on our part to try to really meet the need as they've stated it. And then a nice opportunity for a conversation along the way to bring some gospel message that, you know, we're doing this because our Lord commands us to help those who are in need, and this is why we're helping you. And it gives us some time with the person, even if it's just for 20 minutes, to meet that need for them that they've expressed, but at the same time get some personal attention. So we typically try to do it that way. And then, you know, I've kind of written there, we just try to verify the facts and try to respond as quickly as we can, and then we avoid that cash assistance. I can't even remember a time when we've actually given someone cash. I don't think we've ever done it. Right. Yeah. Right. Sometimes the situation isn't they knock on the door or they come, but they may call and leave a message, and we'll respond to the message and invite them to worship. And then after worship, you can meet with the deacons, things of that nature. So trying to get them to come here, hopefully for the worship service, but even if they came afterwards or snuck in at the end, we're still going to meet with them and try to meet their need in a gospel-centered way. Any other comments or questions about the non-member situation before I move into the member one? Now, with the member situation or a non-member who has a much closer relationship to the church, a regular visitor, a friend. There are people who are just are not members or listed as friends in the bulletin, for example. We're gonna do similar work as with a non-member, but since that relationship is more personal, there's a lot less of a verification, and we're much less restricted on cash assistance. if somebody came across a need and they explained it to us and said, the problem is, you know, I have this $74.32 bill for this, then we're, you know, it's much easier to say, pay to the order of $74.32. Many times we do try to do some of the same things and pay things directly, mostly for accounting purposes and making it more clear as we review checks and things of that nature. So, I mean, a lot of times we will just pay directly, even with a member, and not necessarily go directly with cash. But for the most part, we are much, much more giving of the actual cash when it comes to a member. And then we also will try to meet needs when we know something drastic has happened very quickly, like a job loss, for example, or, well, like when my father passed away, or actually before he passed away, when I was traveling back and forth and Carl was helping me move. It was just, you need help moving. Here's a certain amount of cash so that you can help pay for gas and the rental and the truck and all that kind of stuff. Just things of that nature. Just instead of waiting for me to come and say, boy, I really need help with this move, they just step in and they just stepped in with me and said, here's some money to help offset all these expenses. Take it. So we'll try to do that as well. The other component of when we're working with a member is when we're helping with that short-term need, we try to pay special attention to prevent it becoming something long-term. So our antennas are kind of raised up and we're trying to give some kind of counseling or some kind of practical advice that helps to sow the seeds for if this becomes a recurring problem for somebody, that they're starting to get the necessary information to start to become good stewards. So we want to, it's one of our main duties when we're providing diaconal aid is to make sure it's coming with a message of good stewardship and handling finances. And that can happen where human nature being what it is, you tend to try to avoid making hard decisions and continue, well, I can, you know, get $100 or a couple $100 and next month it's the same. And we don't want to feed that. We want training and exhortation to, okay, this is the new normal for you. Let's work on trying to make this so that you're living within your means rather than continuing to feed poor stewardship of someone's finances. Okay, and that kind of gets us, flows right into the long-term needs section. But before I move on, I'll take any comments or questions. Some long-term needs, some examples would be financial needs with long-term implications such as a job loss or just general poverty or debt. Some people are quite in a lot of debt. Long-term medical issues that maybe prevent either somebody from realizing their full income potential or just causing a lot of bills. And then there can be also a lot of non-financial problems that can have a lot of financial implications, and I've listed a few there that thankfully we've been generally free of, at least that I know of, prison, divorce, addictions, emotional and mental health issues. A lot of these issues can, even though they're not directly financial, can have a lot of financial implications for a family. And so those are a couple of examples of things that are just cause a long-term need on the part of the person. You know, there are several causes of those things. There's just plain misfortune. There's environmental factors like a disaster possibly ruining your home, or we would hope that'd be relatively short-term, but it could have a lot of lasting effects for quite a while. Poor economy might be considered an environmental factor. You're just having trouble with work. And then, of course, probably should be maybe number one is sin. A lot of these causes are a poor stewardship of the resources that God's blessing you with. So when it comes to these long-term needs, our diaconal response is a little bit different. We tend to be a lot more deliberate rather than responding as quickly as we can. And our general attitude is to share the blessings. Every month, all of you are just contributing generously to a fund for this very purpose, to help those who have need. And so our general attitude is we have to share these blessings. So we want to help somebody to the extent that the good stewardship of the church's resources are maintained, and then we have a foundation of biblical wisdom in how we handle those. So our number one rule is to avoid some kind of a dependency. We want to provide help, not just a monthly stipend. We want to guide people rather than, say, direct them. Guide them in principles of stewardship rather than directing them. Coach them in things that they can do rather than doing it for them. And so you get into a situation where it's really a big counseling role of trying to counsel in the principles of stewardship, which we went over that first class. That was our topic for the first class, is what is stewardship, and that's our job when we're in general. That's our job for teaching the congregation. When we're trying to meet a diaconal need, it really comes to the forefront. So, most, if not all, long-term needs do require practical assistance and counseling. We don't all have all the range of gifts and skills that are needed to do that. So, this is when we get into these things. This is where getting help, even without from outside the church, if necessary, it has to be sought. Now, we need to be able to marshal other resources, whether it be individual members who have a particular skill in a certain area that we think person could benefit from, whether it's going to the session to involve them with the situation so that there's counseling coming from the session. So we have to be able to sort of make sure we get help where appropriate. And a couple of things that we do consider, what can the person do to help himself? That's an important thing that we try to do, is sort of make an assessment of what the person can do rather than the problems they're having. What are you able to do? And we also consider that attitude towards stewardship. A member with a positive attitude and towards stewardship is obviously easier to help. And how we work with them in that assistance and counseling, that's one of the first things we want to work on. Working on that attitude toward stewardship. And then I sort of touched upon it in bullet point 3, involving the church. So a lot of long-term needs may require the deacon to engage individual members. I gave an example of when we have the work days of helping out someone who needs help cleaning their yard, for example. And that would be something that we can foster among members to do on a regular basis. We don't necessarily have to personally do it. And if someone has a burden for a particular member to want to help them regularly, we would try to foster that. And when it comes to some issues that are a little bit more, say, serious, like some of the items I mentioned before, such as addictions or mental health issues, or we have deliberations every month on the Ministry of Mercy, which, if necessary, includes, or if applicable, includes discussions about an individual member. And so we're trying to keep that within the circle of the diaconate and also the session, so that people, if they are dealing with us, they can feel confident that their problems are not being broadcast throughout the congregation. We try to maintain a confidentiality on that. But if somebody can help and the person's willing to include that member in the help, then we would try to bring that person or group of people together to help the individual. Those are, a quick rundown of those principles that we're using to do the Ministry of Mercy here. Who has questions or comments? Okay. It is a challenge. There are always a few members who are very good at keeping the pulse on what's going on and give us, check out such and such. He needs you. Go ask them, And that's just kind of part of the, when you have 100 plus people, some people are closer to a particular person than others. It's just the nature of relationships. And so if you are particularly close to a family, you will know things that nobody else does. And applying some of the wisdom, good Christian wisdom, to knowing when you need to help get get somebody to step in and help that family is very helpful to the diaconate. Go ahead, Lennon. Yes, the comment was that, if I can try to summarize it, is when you look at the outline of how we deal with short and long-term needs, it covers a lot of the pitfalls that can come up in ministering mercy. That is as I said earlier when we talked about the Deacon Summit, I mean, this is coming right from that. And that was part of what we learned over, a little over 3 years ago, and that helped us change our approach. And we really weren't thinking along these lines from up until about 2010. I mean, we kind of knew it, and we sort of, it was there, but it just helped to crystallize everything and how we should be doing it, so that we're doing it more consistently, and it's helped tremendously. Go ahead, Greg. Oh yes, we developed it was the Ministry of Mercy guidelines, and actually that was one of the things that came out of the first summit. So we did that. We started working on that in the summer of 2010. I'm not sure exactly when we finished it. And this is a pretty good summary of what's contained in that document. That document exists and is available for the congregation to look at. So it has been available on the back tables. Maybe a few other copies would need to be printed. There's nothing there now, but it is something that is available for the congregation to see. Before I close in prayer, a couple of items just on the diaconate. Number one, we generally meet the first Tuesday of the month. We haven't confirmed if we're meeting on the first yet, but so if you're ever wanted to come to a meeting, it's open. I mean, it's not open that you just come in when you want, but you can let us know that you'd like to come and talk about any diaconal matter or any matter for the building or finances. You're welcome to do that. If you'd like it just to be a more informal conversation, we can always listen to you after worship or a phone call or something of that nature. But if there's anything that you heard over the 4 weeks that you wanted to discuss further or talk about or give us some advice or make comments, we're all ears. Also, if it's gotten you to think about anything that you'd like to do that you think is related to diaconal ministries that you feel like you have some gifts for that you want to be more active in, we'd like to try to work with you on those gifts and allow you to do more good works. So any of those items, please feel free to approach a deacon to talk about them.